ParaX Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Listening at home, at work, or anywhere. Thanks for making ParaX part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. ParaX.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to a special episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, producer, and host of this show. I have had and have the privilege this evening to interview Dr. Scott Kolbaba. His life experiences, along with the discussions of his fellow doctors about what most of us call paranormal, brings to the show a sense of intrigue, wonder, and alternative perspective about the issues that often resonate, not only just curiosity, but also perhaps defy naturalistic events occurring in our everyday lives. Dr. Kolbaba is a U.S. physician of internal medicine who completed a tour in the Marine Corps Reserves, attended the University of Illinois College of Medicine, where he graduated with honors, and completed a residency at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. In his private practice, he has been recognized as one of the top doctors in the Chicagoland area by Chicago Magazine. Dr. Kolbaba recently published a book called Physicians Untold Stories with 26 Other Physicians, found on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Noble, that include a series of short stories about doctors who have had miraculous experiences with their patients that appear to defy modern science. In review of Dr. Kolbaba's book, the many stories and dialogues shared by several contributing doctors and their patients attempts to reach out to those within and outside the medical community to embrace the energy that connects us all, both human and spiritual, and the awareness and acceptance that this connection helps to change and guide the way we live and care for ourselves and for another. The question remains, is there such a thing as divine intervention, or are experiences merely coincidences? Dr. Kolbaba, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kelly. It's great to be here.
Dr. Kolbaba and I are Skyping this evening, so I hope the quality of sound is in both of our favors here. Dr. Kolbaba, where might you be Skyping from?
Just one of the western suburbs of Chicago, Wheaton, Illinois.
Wheaton, Illinois. Okay, and let me also remind the audience again, can you tell us again what type of medical doctor you are and how many years have you been practicing?
I almost hate to admit how many years I've been practicing, Kelly. It's been 35 years. Woo! I know I don't look that old.
Time to retire, Dr. Kolbaba!
I love what I'm doing. I love taking care of patients. I'm just a general internal medicine doc. So what? I'm primary care. I take care of whatever comes through the door. And I still go to the hospital, see my patients in the hospital, see them in the office. And I take care of families and teenagers and adult medicine. And it's been fun. And I love what I do. And I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, thank you for your contributions. And I'm sure many would also agree with me that what you do is very important work.
Thank you.
Okay, so now let's take a look at your book here. Okay, a subtitle on the cover of your book reads, Discover the Miracles in Your Life. Okay, can you tell us what compelled you to write this book?
I think it was craziness and insanity, I think, Kelly. It took me 4 years. This was supposed to be a six-month project. It took me 4 years. I'm a busy doc. I've got 7 kids, and I used my abundant leisure time between midnight and 2 a.m. to write the book. I think what got me started, though, really, was I started to have some really unusual experiences that I really couldn't explain, and they were kind of goosebumpy experiences for me. I let those pass, and then what really tipped me over was a couple docs came to me with their experiences just out of the blue. And when I heard those stories, I felt I'd better write them down and start writing a book.
Wow. Well, I assume you're going to be writing more books for us in the future, or is that part of your plan?
Part of the plan. I'd like to do another book on doctors, and I think one of the things I'd love to do is a book on nurses' untold stories. I think there's a lot of nurses that, especially in the ICUs and places like that where people are close to death, that experience some very unusual things, and I'd love to bring those out and publish those too.
I think that one would be really interesting. We'll talk a little bit about that and that angle maybe as we go through the interview. I'm going to revisit that just a little bit toward the end, I think. Let's start with some of your stories in your book. You address a number of stories in your book, which adds a nice flavoring, by the way, to the book. And I would like to first ask by if you can recall offhand some of the stories that definitely intrigued you the most that would perhaps lift our eyebrow or intrigue us in return. What a couple of stories you might share?
Sure. One of the first ones that really got me interested in writing the book was one about a fellow orthopedic surgeon, Steve Heim is his name. Steve's an orthopedic back specialist. He does back surgeries. He's also a trauma surgeon. And Steve was skiing with his wife and his wife's sister in Colorado, and they were going down a mountain that they'd never gone on before, and it was a very steep mountain and rugged. And when they were about just at the beginning of skiing, they suddenly experienced a blizzard that caused the temperature to drop. The wind came up. It was blowing snow upside down and sideways in all directions. And they could hardly ski down the mountain, hardly see where they were going, but they started to ski. They had to ski down the mountain. They came to a patch of trees right in the middle of their run. They had to go to the right or the left. And Dr. Heim went to the right and thought the girls were following him, but discovered shortly after he had made that decision to go to the right that the girls weren't following him. And he then had to go to through the trees to get to where the girls were on the other side, and they were waiting for him. What happened then was very interesting. He got about halfway through this grove of trees. He was skiing in 5 feet of powder, and everything suddenly became very quiet, very silent. And he didn't quite know what it was about. He felt this feeling of dread inside. And he could hear himself breathe. He could hear the crunch of snow under his skis. It was just an abnormal kind of feeling. And he was suddenly taken with the thought that he had to stop skiing. So he stopped skiing. He had no idea why he's standing there. The blizzard's coming down. The snow's coming down like crazy. He's in the middle of a blizzard, and he stopped in the middle of a woods where he knew the girls were waiting for him on the other side. Then he did something even more unusual. He took his skis off and started to climb up the mountain in the opposite direction from where the girls were. He had no idea what he was doing, but he just felt this overwhelming compulsion that he was being called to do something that had life and death proportions. And he was climbing up the mountain, climbing and walking and climbing and not walking. Got about 100 feet up the mountain, he came to a large pine tree. And when you have a snowfall that's that deep, 5 feet, there's a thing called a tree well, that the snow goes down like a bowl to the bottom of the trunk of the tree. And when he stood in front of a big tree and looked down, he suddenly realized why he was there. There under the tree was a body covered in snow. If he hadn't been right on top of the tree, he would have never seen it. And he was a trauma surgeon, so he knew exactly what to do. He brushed off the snow off his individual's face. He looked like he was dead. He had a gray face. He couldn't tell if he was breathing. But being a trauma surgeon, he reached down for the carotid artery, which he felt, and it was a weak pulse. But there was a pulse. He was alive. So he went into the sudden trauma mode. He put the individual down with his head down a little bit. He brushed off the snow, covered him with his jacket, started yelling for help. One of the last skiers down the mountain heard his cry for help and came to him and said, "What can I do?" And he said, go down as soon as you can get to a phone, call the ski patrol and get him up here as soon as possible. This fellow's almost dead. So the fellow disappeared. About 20 minutes later, he saw the lights from a snowmobile and pulling a gurney behind, and they loaded this hypothermic shocky skier onto the gurney, took him down to a waiting ambulance at the lodge, and took him off to the hospital. Steve then, after realizing what had gone on, was shaking with adrenaline and cold, put his jackets on and went back to meet the girls at the other side of the woods. They were still waiting for him. They skied down the mountain. The next day, he called the hospital to find out what had happened, and the individual had lived. He was doing well. The orthopedic surgeons that took care of him there were very complimentary about his splinting of his broken leg in the field with a tree branch in his underclothes. And Steve realized that then, and he said to me, you know, there's something there's a higher power here. There's a God that looks out for us, and that's the only way I can explain this. And what's interesting is that Steve said that there were two people that were saved that day, he and the skier, because 2 years before that, his father had arrested when he was skiing with Steve in a mountain in Michigan. Steve rushed him to the first aid center, and they did CPR for about an hour, but he lost his father. And Steve thought at that point that he was responsible for his father's death and had that feeling of guilt for the last 2 years. when he saved this skier, he felt this was his second chance. It was given a second chance, and that his guilt was relieved. He realized that his father had reached his time, and it was time for him to go, whatever Steve did. And Steve felt this second chance saved his life in addition to the skier that he saved.
I think the one question that goes through my mind when I hear this story is, do you think that it's possible? We talk about higher powers and divine intervention and stuff like that. One thing that goes through my mind is, did he ever think to this day that the divine intervention or the higher power was, did you say it was his father versus another type of energy? Did he ever think that, did he ever identify or label or put his finger on who he thought was actually directing him to that skier?
He thought it was the higher power. He thought it was God. He said, this is God directing me to this skier. And you know, he's not a religious person. He doesn't belong to any organized religion or go to church, but he's very, after this experience, he's very spiritual and thinks that there's something that's higher than us that looks out for us.
That's interesting. I think many of us, especially those listening to this program, I would almost just anticipate or guess that probably a good 25% to 50% probably could shake their heads and say, yeah, I've had some coincidence in my life that hasn't quite been explained. That leads us into the next question here, I think. There are several points that you make in your book. One of them was that you wanted to create and discuss the idea of connectivity, and that science may or may not be part of this. How do you explain to others the importance of connection in general? Obviously, there was a connection made of some sort on the mountain that day, and many of us have had connections of varying degrees depending on our situations. How do you explain the importance of connection?
Well, you know, in the book, there are a number of stories about people, and love has a lot to do with this. People that love each other seem to be connected in unusual ways. Let me give you an example. John Kowalski is an anesthesiologist here in our community. And John was having what turned out to be a stroke, and he realized that. But for some reason, he was sitting at home waiting, and because of the stroke and the alteration in his mind, he just didn't make that connection. He just sat there and simply just was doing nothing. And, you know, when you have a stroke, the sooner you can get to treatment, the better, because they can give reversible agents these days that dissolve clots. And he was sitting there for quite a while, and all of a sudden he got a text from his sister. Now, his sister never, ever texts him. And she was working in a different city, texted him and said something like, I was just thinking about you and seeing how you were. And then about 2 seconds later, she's texted, I love you. He thought that was really, really bizarre because he'd never gotten a text from her ever before. She texted him, and that seemed to wake him up as to, you know, maybe there are people that love me, and maybe I am an important person, and maybe I need to get some help. So he went into the other room where his wife was, said, I think I'm having a stroke. You know, he wasn't totally paralyzed at that point. And he said, let's get to the hospital, and they did. They were able to administer medication that reversed the stroke, and he did very well. And he's always wondered why his sister, and he asked his sister, why did you happen to contact me at that time? And she said, well, you know, I was busy working, and I had a big project to do, and I couldn't take the time to call you or text you, but I just had that compulsion that I had to do something right then. And she went from her computer over to her phone, texted him, and then texted him a second time, just because she had that feeling she needed to do it a second time. So I think there's some connection that we don't understand. And John also has said that his mother, who's died, there's a special number that she was very fond of, 22. And after she died, there were a whole series of coincidences where he was running into the number 22. he'd get a dollar bill, and that would be written on the dollar bill 22, or he'd go to a hotel, and the room number was 22, and a whole series of things that he just couldn't explain. So I think we're connected in strange and unusual ways in some cases that we just can't explain.
Yeah, I think some of us, including myself, can agree with that. I'm just thinking of, as you're talking, some of the situations I've had. Probably the most common situation that most people can relate to is when, for example, let's say you are thinking about somebody, and all of a sudden, like you said, they text or they call you. In my particular case, I had a situation where I had a boyfriend of mine who lived in Amsterdam, and within seconds, moments, minutes, after I would start, just out of a fluke, start thinking about him, I would hear from him, and I would think, how odd to have such a connection where you can almost think about someone and then the phone rings and it's them, or you think about someone or they write you something. So I do believe myself that there is something to this connection or higher connection that a lot of us simply can't explain. Which brings us to my next question here. I have a subtitle on my own website that says that science cannot explain everything. It's part of the theme of my show as well. And from a personal or professional perspective, can you expand on why science cannot explain everything without getting yourself into hot water with the medical or scientific community? Now, be careful now, you know, be careful what you say here. But I'm sure that you have some kind of thoughts on why you feel, maybe even personally, why science can't explain everything.
I do. And you know, when I started writing this book, I started talking with docs. And one of the things I would ask them would be, I'm writing a book about things that you can't explain scientifically. Have you had any experiences like that? And I interviewed about 200 doctors, and it was amazing the number of docs that really had some very interesting stories. The ones I included in the book were ones that gave me goosebumps or made me cry out of emotion. And so I included those, but I ran into lots and lots of stories that you can't explain scientifically. And let me just tell you one, for example. One of the first ones that actually got me interested in writing a book, and that was from Dave Mokel, another orthopedic surgeon who was doing a lot of foot surgery at the time, and we got a mutual patient that he operated on. And when I was making rounds in the hospital, he ran up to me and grabbed me by the arm and said, "Scott, I've got this amazing story I want to tell you." And I said, "Okay, tell me. And he said, "I can't tell it till you hear." And I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Someone might hear me. They might think I'm crazy if I tell you this, if they hear the story." So I said, "Okay, let's go to he had my interest up by that time. Let's go to an empty patient room." And he told me a story about Mary, one of our mutual patients, who had a cardiac arrest on the table while Dave was just about ready to get to operating on her. And evidently, the antibiotic they administered caused her to have an anaphylactic reaction, a serious allergic reaction, and she had a cardiac arrest, stopped breathing, heart stopped, basically was dead. Everyone rushed in from the rooms around the operating room where they were when they called the code, and one of the guys that started to take over to do CPR was a tech that had unusually bright red hair underneath his operating room cap, and he was doing CPR, wasn't doing it quite adequately enough, so Dr. Mokel asked him to step aside. When he didn't, after a couple requests, he actually pushed him away, and he stumbled away because codes aren't the most polite thing. It's a life and death situation. He was in charge. So after he started to do CPR, they administered some epinephrine and a few other things. Mary came around again and actually lived. She didn't wake up until the next day. The cardiologist determined it was just the antibiotic that she reacted to. And after about 3 days of intensive care, she was ready to go home. And Dr. Mokel walked into the room and said, "Mary, I want to tell you that it's time to go home, and these are the instructions." And she said, "Thank you for saving my life." Dr. Mokel, being a pretty conservative and humble guy, said that it was a team effort and so forth. And she said, "No, I saw you push that guy with the red hair aside, and I saw you do the CPR, and that's what got me going again." By this time, Dr. Mokel, who's a very scientific person, couldn't quite explain that, had to sit down for a minute to regain his composure. And then she went on to explain dozens of little minutiae of things that happened in the operating room, that Dr. Mokel paged me, for example, to come and help with the code, but I wasn't in the hospital. He kept looking at the door for me, other things that happened, what clothes people were wearing, and a whole host of things that she never could have understood had she not been there. And Dr. Mokel said, "Well, You know, how do you know all this? And she said, when I arrested, I rose up to the top of the room, and I could see everything that was happening very clearly and understand it very well. And while I was there, my grandmother, she said, came to me, who had been dead for many years, and told me it wasn't my time to go, that I would need to be a good and kind person, and then there would be a special place in heaven for her. By that point, her heart started again. She went back, and that was the end of her experience. And Dr. Mokel never told that to anyone except for his wife and for me. And when I heard that story, I thought, this is amazing. That's clearly, you can't explain that. There's no scientific explanation for what happened there. And it's interesting that Mary went on to live a normal life for quite a few years. She had some major illnesses, which ultimately took her life. But she was the kindest and most wonderful person after that. And before the surgery, she really wasn't a very kind person at quite a few times. So I call this story the Mary's Christmas Carol, like Scrooge. But she went through an experience that changed her life and changed Dr. Mokel's life, too.
One of the thoughts that comes to my mind is when patients are sharing their experiences with you or other doctors regarding incidents like this, how do you respond? Because I would assume that you are trained in the medical community to be a professional, be a certain way professionally. So how do you react to stuff like this?
Well, the first thing you think about is, you know, is this really a bogus story? Is this really true? Could this really have happened? And the second thing you think about is, how can I explain this scientifically? And when she went on to mention, in this particular case, so many of the little details that no one could have even related to her, when you can't explain it scientifically, there's no scientific explanation for something like this, then you say to yourself, this is beyond what I can explain, and there's got to be something. And then it gets down to your philosophy on life, your philosophy on religion. Do you believe in a God? Do you believe in a higher power? And I think most of the docs ultimately that had these experiences came to me and said, this has to be a higher power that loves us unconditionally, that participates in our lives, and has caused some of these amazing experiences to happen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. One of the things that also comes along with this, and I know this just from someone who's experienced the paranormal nearly 100 times, and in some cases a very, very terrifying experience. Usually when I tell people about, I had a situation last year in Wales where I was in a very haunted bed and breakfast or a hotel, whatever they want to refer to it over there as, and it had 12 apparitions hanging around this hotel, and I requested to be in the most haunted room, of which they would not put me in because they felt that I would not be able to handle it, so they put me in the second most haunted room. And I will tell you, I'm not a candidate for panic attacks. I had such an extreme panic attack. An oval-shaped mirror, floor length, had my husband, once he started throwing out the holy water just before we went to bed, this mirror started cycling around in front of us, and this mirror had also been known to move and like hit the rear ends of the staff in there cleaning the room, and they'd wonder what kicked them in the rear end and all that, and it was this mirror that would move. But the thing is that it was so terrifying to me. When I tell the story, I've got it also in my book, but when you tell these stories, when you share these stories with people, the first thing they do is they kind of look at you like you need to go, you know, get yourself into a straitjacket or something. I wonder even more so, not necessarily in your medical profession, but I would say that, and I know this from being trained as a doctor, not in the medical profession, but that there is a certain line of professionalism that one must keep, but I started taking risks by just basically opening up about my experiences, and my take on it now is kind of like, it doesn't matter if you don't believe me or not, it happened, and that's just the way it is. But that brings us to backlash, okay? So most of the doctors I've listened to, I've actually seen her, you know, they're a little bit nervous about, it seems like they're nervous about expressing some of their viewpoints about higher interventions or powers or energies. And so how do you handle backlash from either the general community or even within the own doctor community regarding your experiences with this? How do you handle that?
Well, you know, I was very concerned about how patients and how others would see me after I'd written this book. And I can tell you that every single doctor was also concerned about what this would do with their for their practice and for their relationship with their other colleagues and so forth. But I think, and what happened was very surprising. At our launch, we had hundreds of people come to the launch that were thrilled that we would come out and actually be courageous enough to tell these stories. And I think what happened was that people, many people, have had experiences like this, or their families have had experiences like this. And I think they were very, very grateful that these scientists, these medical professionals, would actually be courageous enough to tell these stories. And it was, there has been no criticism at all that I've gotten. And the doctors are heralded as courageous individuals that have come out and you know, allowed people to express their experiences to them too. It's interesting. John Kowalski, whose story I just told you, wanted to remain anonymous in the book. When he saw what happened at the launch and how the doctors were being praised for their coming forward with these stories, he said, "I don't want to be anonymous anymore. I want you to include me and let people know who the author of this story is and not just anonymous," because all the other doctors had their names attached to the stories. And I think the reason that the doctors would take this risk is something I talk about later on in the book. The book's divided into three sections. One's a section about the stories themselves, and one's a section about what I learned about the docs. And one of the things that I mentioned there, and one of the great characteristics of the docs that I interviewed, was a thing I call them sappy do-gooders. Doctors in general, I think, want to do good in the world. They want to help everyone that they run across. They want to cure cancer and help anyone that comes in to them with pain or an ailment or a medical condition that they can take care of. And so I think their underlying feeling for revealing these incredible stories is that they wanted people to know that there's something else out there, that there is hope in this world, that there is love in this world, and love is a powerful force, and that there is a God. Most of them called it God, some of them called it a force or whatever, something higher, a higher power. Most called it God, that loves us unconditionally and helps us. And they wanted, I think, as these do-gooders, to have people get some comfort and realize that even though they may be in tough shape or have lost a loved one or have serious illness themselves, that there is hope, that there is love, that there is a God, there's life after death, and that sometimes the people gone before us can participate in strange and wonderful ways in our lives.
I think what you mentioned too is stories, part of your book, and which is good because you've got stories in there. Stories can be a very powerful and eliciting persuasive change source in broadening people's perspectives. The stories also help each other or another connect. They also help tear down walls, especially those that might feel a little confused or guarded, and especially with skeptics. I know that it's very hard, at least for a really good diehard skeptic that I know, to want to change their perspective on, or at least their mindset, because they're very logical thinkers, on just any topic pertaining to sometimes even God and higher interventions. But I'm going to relate to you now three types of occurrences, and I wonder if you can share something or if you have any experience with each of these. There's three types of occurrences that seem to fascinate or confuse people when it involves unusual coincidences, higher powers, divine intervention. The first one, of course, is near-death experience. Another one is dreams or visions. And the third one is simply what I've experienced a lot of, apparitions who continually try to make contact with one, you know, with me or with others who are listening to this program by hanging around. So let me start with the first one. Let's start with the near-death experiences. Are you able to share with us a story, either from your own book or from your own personal experience, about someone who had passed away, maybe your patient or someone else's, but regained consciousness and reported back to you what they had seen?
Let's see. Well, the one, of course, was Mary from Dr. Mokel. The other one I can think of would be probably John Messett and another individual. John Messett's a gynecologist, and Bob Cornell was his friend. They're both doctors. Bob Cornell is a family practice doc, and John Messett's a gynecologist. They were both very close friends. And every morning in the doctor's lounge, they would talk to each other primarily about fishing. They love fishing. And one day, Bob Cornell didn't show up, and John Messett realized that he was in the ICU, had a massive stroke. He was basically brain dead. And when he went to see him, he was lying there in a coma on a ventilator, and the ICU doc said, he's basically brain dead. We're going to watch him for 3 days to see if anything happens. And if nothing happens, we're going to pull the plug and let him die. And so Dr. Messett was very shaken up about this and didn't know what to do. So, and he realized how much he loved him because when you are with someone so much, you don't realize until they're gone what they meant in your life. So he didn't know what to do. So he just moved his chair a little closer to his face, and he was all alone in the ICU in his little cubicle. He started to tell him stories. And he thought the most interesting story that he could tell him, even though he was convinced he couldn't hear him, and he was almost brain dead, he told him stories about fishing, his favorite subject. And he said the story he told him primarily was one about fishing in the Mackenzie River in Canada, where they caught tons and tons of, Dr. Messett caught tons of fish. He caught about 100 fish the first day. It was a catch and release. And they were graylings. And he told him all the details about the permafrost and flying in on the float plane and so forth. And every day he'd tell him more of those stories. And the third day, when he was scheduled to be unplugged and die, when Dr. Messett walked into the ICU, he noticed that the room was empty, the lights were off, and the bed was taken down, saying he must have died the night before. He asked the nurse what happened to Dr. Cornell, and the nurse kind of laughed at him, and he was a little offended about that. And she said, well, he didn't die. He woke up yesterday. We moved him to the step-down unit. After Messett went down to see him, Dr. Cornell said, thank you for telling me those incredible fishing stories. I heard everything you told me, and he related some of the details about the fishing float plane and the graylings and the Mackenzie River and so forth. He said, that really kept me going. When I was unconscious, I could hear everything going on. You were the only one that would talk to me and acknowledge me and love me. And Dr. Messett, I think, has thought that maybe, just maybe, when you're at the edge of life, you have a choice of crossing that water, crossing that bridge people talk about, crossing through the garden on the other side of the river or whatever. And when he was about to do that, I think these fishing stories and the love that Dr. Messett shared with him actually brought him back and kept him going. And Dr. Cornell lived for a number of years after that. When he finally died, it was a shame that he never made it to the Mackenzie River, at least not in this life, but maybe in the next life he's there fishing.
I think that's a good story. One of the takeaways that I've tried to impress upon even my own family members, or was impressed upon me through some of the deaths in my own family, is that when someone appears to be brain dead or in a coma, don't always think that they can't hear you, because they may not be able to respond that they can hear you, but they can still hear you. So I think if there's a takeaway for our audience here this evening, is don't ever assume that if it appears they can't hear you, think twice on that.
The majority of the time, though, Kelly, I think people really can't hear, but there are times when they can, and you never know.
Right. Right. No, I know. And I think it's better to err on caution that they can, even if they can't. All right, let's move this into a dream or a vision. Any experiences on that either for yourself or your fellow doctors?
Absolutely. There are lots of dreams and visions that we ran into with the doctors. I'll tell you one of my favorites. My good friend Rich Jorgensen, who is a general surgeon, was talking to one of his friends, and the friend related to him, this is a kind of a hippie friend, and she was saying that whenever you have a dream, if you dream about someone, the earth spirit always wants you to tell that person. And so Rich thought that was kind of an interesting comment and didn't think much about it and couldn't remember any of the dreams he'd had. But a couple months later, he had a dream about one of his best friends. It was a judge, Judge Klasso, who was an appellate judge in Illinois. And he dreamt that the judge had died, and he saw him in the coffin in the funeral home. It was a very, very vivid dream. And, you know, usually when you wake up, you think about your dream or something, even if you remember, and then it goes out of your head and it's gone. But this dream was so vivid and so real that he couldn't get it out of his head. And so he thought about this discussion with his hippie friend and decided to call the judge that night. And he said, "Judge, I want to tell you that I had a funny dream about you last night. I dreamt you were dead." The judge kind of laughed and said, "That was an interesting dream." But Dr. Jorgensen then said, "If you could just do me a favor, just make me feel better, get a physical, make sure that you're okay." And the judge said, "Okay, I haven't had a physical for years. I'll go get a physical and I'll make sure I'm okay." And he had his complete physical. Everything was perfectly fine. The internist that saw him said, "You know, don't listen to this crazy surgeon, Dr. Jorgensen. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You're perfectly fine. Go live your life. You're not going to have a heart attack. You're not going to die." And so when Dr. Jorgensen found out about that, he had that feeling in his gut again that this was something he just couldn't let go. And so he called the judge again and said, "Judge, I understand you had a perfectly normal physical, but I still have this feeling that you need to have something else done. Could you just humor me and see my cardiologist, get some tests done from the cardiologist and see what things look like?" And he finally agreed to do that. So Dr. Jorgensen really was sticking his neck out to push him over this dream. And he went to see the cardiologist. He did a stress test. He failed it terribly. He was admitted to the hospital. He had an angiogram, which showed what's called a widowmaker, which is a lesion in the left main coronary artery, which is so abnormal and so bad that usually the life expectancy is in terms of months and not years when a person has that. In addition, he had multiple other lesions in his coronary arteries that would have taken his life. And they operated on the next day. They didn't even want him to go more than one day because they thought if they did, he might have a heart attack and die. He was perfectly fine after the surgery. He lived. He lived for many, many years afterwards. And Dr. Jorgensen told me that even though he had to go out on a limb, this dream is so real that he had to do something. And thank goodness he did. It was a premonition of something that was awful that was going to happen to his good friend.
So when you think about situations like this, and I have had myself those gut, many of us have had those gut feelings, these unusual twinges that go on inside ourselves that say something doesn't feel right here. Who do you think is speaking to us?
You know, that's always a good question. And do you listen to all of those things or do you not? And that's a really hard thing to know. Rich was convinced that this was a higher power, this was divine intervention, that this was God that had sent this dream down to him to save his friend's life. I think we all have little coincidences, little things that happen to us from time to time that we just can't explain, little coincidences. And one of the hopes in my book is to have people realize that there are some little things that happen to them, that pay attention to those things. If you have a little voice in the back of your head that tells you to do something, don't necessarily rush and do something crazy, but pay attention to that because some of those things may really be real. There may be something to that. And a lot of the doctors that I talk to have had those kinds of feelings. And when they have them, my partner, for example, Dr. John Boren, I guess those occasionally, and he says, "I always listen to that because that never has served me wrong." He had one patient that he got a little feeling that he needed a stress test after he was doing a pre-op on this guy, and he cleared him for surgery, and then later on kept on thinking, you know, he had this voice in the back of his head, not really a true voice, but just a feeling that he needed to look more at his heart. And sure enough, when he did, the guy had a bad coronary disease and needed the bypass before his surgery. So I think my goal and my hope in this book is to have people recognize there's some little things that happen that may not be coincidental, that may be something, a little divine intervention in their lives that will serve them well or serve others.
All right, let's move this into our third one then. And I don't know how much experience you have had with this, but I know that, and as I mentioned earlier, especially if you do a book with nurses, I have, my husband has a number of nurse relatives and on his side of the family who have shared their experiences with apparitions, okay? So I wanted to ask you if you've ever had any moments, whether in a hospital, in hospice, in a nursing facility, wherever you might be taking care of a patient, if you've ever, first of all, we'll start with you, if you've ever witnessed any apparition that's hanging around or relaying messages, or anyone that you have worked with, or maybe even your patients who claim that they see somebody hanging around. What's been your experience with that?
Well, you know, Kelly, I've never had a personal experience of an apparition, but there are several doctors that I talk with that have had some experiences that were kind of surprising to me. One was a general surgeon, Noemi Sigalov, who actually has a very interesting history herself. She escaped from communist Romania, came here pauper, basically, went to school in old raggedy clothes and was made fun of. And her only way to overcome that criticism, and she was called a commie and things like that, although that was just the opposite, was to excel in school. And she finished in the top of her high school class, the top of her college class, and then went on to become a surgeon, which in those days was unusual because the surgical field was primarily males. And when she was in her residency program, there were 34 males and one female. So she was called the girl and given some criticism there. So she had to overcome a lot. But she tells an interesting story about a couple that she took care of. She took care of the wife. And they were a couple from Africa. They lived in the United States and were missionaries, missionary physicians in Africa, and dedicated their life to teaching the gospel and to operating and saving people medically in Africa. And when they finally got too old, they had to retire and move back to the States, and Dr. Sigalov was taking care of the wife. And every time they would be in the examining room, they would ask Noemi about her religious beliefs, and they would, you know, try to get her to be a little more spiritual, a little more religious. And the husband would say, someday we're going to show you that there is life after death, and that there is something more to this world, and that people do go to a special place after they leave the earth. And she thought that was a nice thing, and thanked them, and she really wasn't offended by their trying to convert her a little bit. And she lost contact with them, and then one of the weekends that Noemi had off, she decided to go to Arizona for a little three-day vacation. And the day that she was leaving, she when she was on vacation, she never turns her phone on, never turns her email on, because she doesn't want to be disturbed or you know how you feel terrible when something bad happens. So she doesn't want to know about anything that happened. When she got to the airport flying back from her vacation in Arizona, she got an email from the hospital vice president that said, we're sorry to regret that Ron, I can't remember his last name now, but a good friend of the hospital, former missionary, has died, and that he was a good friend of all of us. And it's interesting that the morning that Noemi left on her vacation, the morning that she had to leave, when she walked into the hospital, suddenly she was overcome with the feeling, and then she saw in her mind's eye Ron standing there with a smile on his face as if he had accomplished his major life's goal. And she blurted out, "Hi there," and she looked around and suddenly he was gone. But she looked around to see if anyone heard her. She was embarrassed about saying that. But then she realized that he indeed had showed her that there is something after death. He had died that morning and had come back evidently to show her that there is something else. And he had accomplished then his greatest missionary experience.
That, I find that interesting. While you're talking, I was kind of thinking about some of the occurrences that have happened with me. I photographed a young gal in a my relatives and my great great or great grandfather in a screened window, and I had often wondered, this is where this all began with me as well, with apparitions, and from there it just really exploded for me. Once they know you're open, or at least they knew I was open, they always come running when I'm in the area. But the one thing that's always interesting to me is, like, usually an apparition, for those that have followed the show, they can usually only hold their energy for about, if you're lucky, 3 to 5 seconds, and then they just kind of dissolve or disappear. And sometimes it's just a miraculous capture. But the one thing I was going to also get your perspective on, since you're close to patients in especially in hospitals and hospices and nursing facilities, excuse me, I'm going to cough, is this story. And I would like to hear your take on it and see what you have to say about it. So I'm going to share with you a story. This is a true story. It happened to my father and my family a few months ago in December. My dad passed away from cancer. And he did not want to die. He fought to stay awake, so because he had unfortunately one of the doctors kind of made a mistake of saying, well, it won't matter if he sleeps, he'll probably die in his sleep, and that made him paranoid. So now he's trying to stay awake every single day of his life. But anyway, that led into his final moments. And what happened was, my brother and my sister were out in the waiting room, and my mother was with him as he was in his final minutes of passing. And at the point that he passed, my brother had turned around in the waiting room, and there was a very elderly man, very crippled, very hunched over in his wheelchair, first hunched over, had no movement of any other sort before then. And all of a sudden, this man sits up and he starts waving at my brother and smiling, like, hi, I'm here, something really bizarre like that. And my brother just sat, and I guess he said he was taken back by that. And then seconds later, the man would go right back down into his hunched being and all that. It was as if the energy of my dad had taken over the body of this man. And I've only heard of one other report from a nurse who said they had seen something very similar to this. But have you ever heard of reports like this before, of energies that have passed on trying to share a final message through the body of somebody else as their means of saying, I'm okay, I'm fine, and, you know, whatnot? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, there are some really unusual things that happen in this world, and I can't explain all of them. I know one of the doctors, my partner, actually, Dr. Boren, had an experience very much like that. I was taking care of a World War II veteran. Gus was his name, and he was 90, 91 years old, and he had some shrapnel injuries that were still open in his legs from World War II. Believe it or not, that happens sometimes. And he ultimately was succumbing to those injuries and Alzheimer's disease. And I got a call. I was making rounds in the hospital. I got a call from Lucy, his wife, early in the morning, and she said, I'm sorry to let you know that Gus just passed away. And I said, oh, it's too bad, but, you know, I was expecting this, and she'd done a great job taking care of him for a long time. And so I was finishing rounds and went down to the doctor's lounge where my partner was just coming in. And, you know, we kind of exchanged what happened, the last 24 hours with my patients and his patients. And I said, Gus just died. He looked at me like he saw a ghost. He had to sit down. He turned white. And I said, what's the matter, John? And he said, you'll never believe what happened to me. I was driving in my car, and I always listened to the radio, to the news. And I just had this overwhelming feeling. I had to shut off the news, and something else required my attention. And so he said, I shut off the news, and all of a sudden I began to think about Gus. Now, Gus was my patient. It wasn't his patient. I'm not sure why he would have this overwhelming feeling about thinking about Gus and his World War II experiences, going into Germany and being being shot and injured with shrapnel when a bomb exploded and killed everyone in his platoon except for him. And he said, I thought about how his life was, how great his life was. He raised a bunch of kids, had a held down a job, was able to save his legs through just sheer determination and 20-some operations on his legs to save his legs over the years, and how he was an example to others that he just persevered. And John said, you know, when you said that he had died, the only thing he could think of was this was his last salute. He was saying goodbye to his doctors that had taken care of him for 30 years. And I thought that was very interesting and very revealing that, you know, I think when people do leave, there are times when they can say goodbye or they can communicate with us. And I think when people have passed, that can happen too. People that have gone to their side can still participate in our lives in some unusual ways at times.
Well, we thank you for being open in this field, and we thank you for sharing these types of stories, because it's very important that the dialogue, at least we know in the paranormal field, it's an important mission for us to try to get our voices out there that sometimes, you know, science cannot always be explained. My sense is that you're a trailblazer, that's my feeling, and attempting to open up a dialogue about some of these unusual coincidences that go beyond the explanation of science. And as a doctor of 35 plus years, oh, if I were you, I'd just hang it up and go to Florida. But anyway, what is...
I love it, Kelly.
Boy, sit there with a drink in hand and just think about your life, you know. What is the one thing that you would like to leave behind as your legacy as a contributor to the profession and community regarding your insights about higher interventions or your workings about the afterlife?
You know, I think the things that I'd like are the things that I pretty much explained in my book, that there is something higher than us. There is a higher power. Most of the doctors and myself call it God. That God loves us unconditionally, that he participates in our lives in strange and wonderful ways, that coincidences are more than coincidental in some cases, and that people that have gone before us may actually participate in our lives in strange and wonderful ways also, and that people should have hope that there's something else out there. Even in desperate circumstances and desperate situations, there is hope, there is love, and that love is the most powerful force in the universe.
All right, well, let's talk about some of your goals as we move forward here. So you mentioned earlier possibly a second book on nurses. What else for you?
Yeah, I'd like to do a book on doctors again. I'd like to do a book on nurses, and we've got some discussions that I can't go into with Hollywood, and so we're working with some people there. So we've got some interesting things happening. I've always got the grass doesn't grow very, very long under my feet. There's always something going on here in my life. I'm kind of a type A, and there are lots of things going on here. We're doing some talks and speeches and things like that also.
Well, I think that's great. Tell us again where we can find your book, and give us a website that where people can reach out to you if they want to.
Sure. Physiciansuntoldstories.com is our website that has lots of stories on it and some nice videos. The book is available primarily through Amazon, Amazon.com. It's available as a Kindle or a soft cover. It's also available through Barnes & Noble online, but primarily through Amazon and through our website also. It's Physicians Untold Stories, and it was fun to write it, and I think people are sending me some neat letters about what they get out of the book.
Good. Well, I thank you for being on the show this evening. Once you get to that next book being published, let me know, and I will have you on the show again, and we can talk about some more stories or angles or unusual circumstances. And so, of course, from myself and from the audience that is, you're being heard now all over the world, we thank you for your insights on all this. This concludes our interview for this evening, but I want everyone to tune in next week to hear my episode that will be specifically on omens and coincidences. Thank you, Dr. Kobala, for being with us this evening.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank
you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.